First time, long time, welcome. We got Smitty, Roan, Booze in the booth, and Roney boy, riddle me this. At what point during the 2021 Philadelphia Eagles season are we going to see future Hall of Fame Eagle Joe Flacco take over and lead this team to the promised land?
I think it's going to be a playoff run, Smitty, and I think he's going to earn every cent of that $7 million when we see Nick Foles redux as Joe Flacco comes home in one of the weirdest signings of all time. I don't know what the deal is going to wind up being at max at $7 million, but that better be $7 million for winning the Super Bowl, right?
Yeah, the contract basically is twice as much as it was last year when he was with the Jets, where he went a prominent 0-4 as a starter, stepping in for Sam Darnold. So, I don't know. We'll see. Old Delaware boy Joe Flacco back in Bird's Green. Why the fuck not? We couldn't make Andy Hall into a pro. Let's take a broken Joe Flacco and have him be the backup for Jalen Hurts. It is what it literally is. Like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't affect anything with the exception of that they're paying him like this much, which they shouldn't. But do you honestly care? Does it make it new for you?
I mean, I care because I love the Eagles and like I'll hang on anything that they do. But I think that there's kind of like this fake outrage going on from Philly sports media being like, we could have got Mike Glennon for $1.65 million. Like, we're going to wind up paying him $3.5 million. It's $2 million more than we would have paid somebody else. But, like, if your argument is that we shouldn't have signed him because this year doesn't matter, then fucking paying him a bunch doesn't matter either because this year doesn't matter. So it's like you can't have it both ways.
Look for them to not only trade for Nick Foles, but draft a quarterback at number six still.
I was just going to say, like, I'm okay with that $7 million because it all but ensures the Eagles not taking a quarterback at six. So I'm okay with it.
And them giving a quarterback $130 million extension ensured them not drafting another quarterback in the second round the very next draft. So I don't know. You don't know exactly what's going to happen. I saw something on Twitter. It was just like Howie saying, oh, yeah, look, we're definitely not drafting a quarterback now. Sure. Don't look here. Don't try to trade up in front of us. So you never fucking know about this team. But I will give Howie Roseman a compliment right here, right now.
Smitty?
Yes.
What?
Yes. Listen
what
to this.
What is this?
I think signing Anthony Harris, safety from Minnesota, to a one-year deal. Granted, he's not going to be here after next year, probably. I think that was a great move. Well done, Howie. Because Anthony Harris, when playing his ball, is one of the best safeties in the NFL. You saw 2 years ago when I think he led the league in interceptions. Last year, you know, a bit of a down year. But he's a fucking good player. Why not? Well done, Howie.
Yeah, this is one to get excited about. I don't know if you care about, like, the Pro Football Focus stuff. They had him as, like, their fifth best free agent.
Seventh best
on the entire market. Or then he also graded as their best safety, not this past season, but the season before. There's always excuses for a player's regression, especially when your team signs him. But supposedly the Vikings kind of switched up their defense, their scheme a little bit, so one high safety wouldn't be as valuable, and that's kind of what the Eagles will be using for him. But everything that I'm learning about Glennon, our new DC, is that he values safeties a lot, so maybe this guy's the guy. It seems like we got him incredibly cheap. I mean, for the money that we overspent on Flacco, we are paying him less than half of what he was getting paid last year on his franchise tag, or about half of what he was getting paid. So that's one to get excited about. That's like you're building something, and we're also finding out what holes in the roster they're going to address.
Yeah, and with Anthony Harris getting that franchise tag last year proves that he at one point was that valuable, and I still think he has it. True story, he was in the office to play Madden right before he got that franchise tag, and he, to this day, is the best athlete I've played Madden against.
Better than Keenan Allen? I thought Keenan Allen was
Keenan Allen was good, but Keenan Allen also threw himself 70 times during during the game, and he caught the ball 68 times for 700 yards. So I think Keenan Allen was beatable if I game plan a little better. Joe Mixon was half decent. I should have beat Joe Mixon today. I lost in overtime. But Anthony Harris, like, I legitimately tried, and he still put me fucking 6 feet under. And then some. I think it was like 60 to 20 final score. Great dude. And a great dude. We were bullshitting. Yeah. Like, he was a solid dude. I told him, I got to find the clip now, because I asked him, like, is he going to sign with the Eagles? And he, like, got angry because we were supposed to talk about free agent stuff. But I'm happy he's in Philly. Think it was a good sign. Well done, Howie. Let's get into
Sorry, one more point about the, Anthony Harris. The Eagles' new defensive coordinator actually worked with Harris in Minnesota before he came to the Eagles. So that's another connection that just might fit the mold here.
Yeah, a little familiarity. Never hurt anybody. Bring him in. We'll take the cheap guys. Give us the cast-offs. Give us the guys that were injured. Take flyers on people. Let's see if we can get them in a new system. Let's be optimistic, and let's find diamonds in the rough.
Exactly. Can't wait for him to lead the league in the interceptions next year and then go somewhere else and make bank, because we can't afford to sign him in 2 years because we'll still be in cap hell. Cue the voicemails.
Smitty Rowan and the boys of Tyler, South Philly. Just want to give you a call. Love the show. Keep up the good work. I want to get y'all's take on who should we fucking take in the first round this year. I know, you know, the quarterbacks out there, but if each of you had to pick, who's your first choice? Who's at the top of the wish list? Looking forward to hearing your answers. I'll hang up and listen.
One thing that we've talked about on this show before is that the Eagles love to, like, overcompensate. So I'm trying to think in my mind, like, what did they really lack last year? And how are they going to overcompensate this year? And I'm also taking hints from how they value certain positions. Like, they love filling out the trenches and getting quarterbacks early in the draft, and who they're spending on already in free agency. So they're obviously not going to take a safety. They're probably not going to take a quarterback, though. I don't know if we can really say that, but I think last year that cornerback spot opposite Darius Slay looked really shaky. Avante Maddox is not an outside corner. He's a slot corner, and he could be our slot cornerback this coming year, but we need another cornerback opposite Slay, and we probably need, like, a big one. That would be our overcompensation for Avante Maddox being a small cornerback. So I could see them taking, like, a 6'2 cornerback, but is that going to be the guy you take at six? Another place where they were down was having offensive weapons and receiving threats. So I think it's going to really wind up being either somebody in the trenches, a lineman, or Kyle Pitts, Jamar Chase, or Devontae Smith.
Put it this way. If Sewell, whatever his name is, from Oregon, drops six, you're taking him. I don't care. You're taking him. You're sticking him at tackle for the next 20 years. That is the definition of a rebuild guy. I love taking Surtain, but not at six. Right now, when we're talking, 30 days, 40 days before the draft, things might change with the mocks, but the mock drafts have them going, like, no higher than really like 10, 12 right now. Best case scenario, if we can trade back, get a couple extra picks and get Surtain at like 12 or 10, I'm all for that. That's great. Get a lockdown corner. Magical. Jamar Chase falling to six, still a possibility. And you say he's like, can't miss at that. I'm fine with that. Where I get really shaky is they're saying Pitts is an absolute freak and a can't miss guy.
That, ran a 4.46.
I mean, that just has absolute
dude. He's
bust written all over him.
How? No, how it just does. How?
It just does. They're just putting him up on a pedestal so much. Would you say that Vernon Davis had a career where he was built up to be drafted in the top 10 where he was?
Wait, what do you mean?
Like Vernon Davis out of Maryland, he was kind of like Kyle Pittish. He was a really, really
good. Yeah, but Vernon Davis also had an amazing career.
I wouldn't say he had a top 10 game-changing career. I think he had a good career. Kellen Winslow, Jr., in jail now. Same sort of deal, even though he was more of a prototypical tight end.
He still had an amazing career.
I'm just saying Pitts would be like the Howie.
See, my thing is, if we took Pitts, and tell me if this is dumb, but why not convert him to receiver and have him be like a DK Metcalf-ish type player?
He would, but because that's, you're not just going to line him up outside. You're going to line him up everywhere. He's going to be playing the position that Chris Cooley played, but more athletically, and they'll line him up in the slot.
But like, that's what I think. Like, I think the Eagles need at receiver a big physical guy, which could be Ja'Marr Chase. Sure. Cause the guy's big and he's physical and he's got fucking hands of gold. But like, I think Kyle Pitts is even bigger and more physical, and he just proved that he's fast.
That's I'm just telling you, I got not necessarily bust vibes from Kyle Pitts right now, how much they're blowing him up, but I got overvalued vibes.
He's also a Philly guy, mind you. He's also a Philly guy.
I don't hate that. I don't hate that, but I'm saying, I'm just, this would be a pick that I think would make Howie think he's a lot smarter than he is if he's at six over Chase. Now, if they take him over Chase, that's an abomination. You got to take Chase right here, right now. If they take a quarterback, God help the world. God help the world.
With Pitts, it's like, how are you going to play him? How are you going to use him? And what do you want him to wind up being? Like, do you want, is in best case scenario, is he George Kittle for you? Or is he like DK Metcalf, like you said? Like, I don't know if he necessarily has the speed as DK Metcalf. He's maybe a little bit more of a possession guy, but like, he's supposedly a beast as a possession guy, was like a top 3 yards per reception guy in the NCAA last year. But like, you can get Darren Waller and even Zach Ertz. Like, these are second round and beyond type of guys that you can get really good value at tight end. So
do we also really even need a tight end with Dallas Goedert?
But he's, Pitts isn't a prototypical tight end. He would be put out in the slot half the time. He'd be put in the backfield.
So then make him a receiver. He's not gonna, then.
But you can't just put someone out there at receiver and say be DK Metcalf. Yeah, he's built like that, but there's things like route running and reading the defenses, and there's a lot of shit that goes into playing that X and Z position that he just hasn't done in college. Is he athletically good enough to do that? Maybe. But you're asking a lot from him, saying, hey, play every fucking position on the field and be an all pro while you're at it.
I think Darren Waller is a pretty good comparison for him. And Darren Waller has been a beast for the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. Is that the guy, you know, I mean, if you are guaranteed that production, would you be happy with it? But I do think Devontae Smith, we saw how good he was. He won the Heisman Trophy. He's incredible. He's been, teams have been saying that when they talk to him, he sounds like a 10-year pro. Like, this is like, if we can trade back and get Devontae Smith, he's a possession receiver who's going to catch everything that comes his way. We already had the athletic guy in Rager. I don't think that we can fully sleep on Devontae Smith. He's fallen towards the bottom of the conversation, and he's a skinny dude, but like, he is going to have a good career.
So I was actually just talking to a coach here at Jackson State today who is from the same hometown as Devontae Smith and kind of knows him. And he said that, yes, Devontae Smith is an absolute baller. You know, there's no doubt about it. But the way Steve Sarkisian kind of game planned for him was a very specific way, which he actually doesn't know if it would actually work in the NFL. Plus, not only that, he also said that, you know, Ja'Marr Chase will get you yards after catch. Devontae Smith in the NFL won't get you those yards after catch, even though he's sneaky, very fast, and he's elusive as shit. You know, if he catches a ball in a lot of coverage and a lot of volume around him, he's not getting very many yards, whereas Ja'Marr Chase could break a tackle.
But I see him as being a similar player to Justin Jefferson. And, like, I mean, how salty are we that we don't have him? Yeah. Chase still is my number one receiver, though.
Ja'Marr Chase is only my number one receiver because that's the way the draft and the mocks are rounding out right now. When we watch Devontae Smith play in those playoffs and in the championship, we'd be a fucking moron to pass up on Devontae Smith if he's available and Ja'Marr Chase isn't, and we need a wide receiver. That being said, we could probably trade back and get for him right now if these mock drafts are correct. And also, it makes me think that Howie is just snuffing his own taint to the point that they're just going to draft the other Alabama wide receiver at six.
Yeah, that would be hilarious and incredible.
He's
not bad though. I mean, he's good.
He's not bad, but neither was Jalen Reagor.
Are we talking about Jalen Waddle? Jefferson. We talking about Jalen Waddle?
We're talking about Waddle or even fucking Mac Jones. Imagine we trade back Surtain and Devontae Smith are available at, 10, 11, 12, and we draft Mac fucking Jones. Oh.
You might as well trade for Tua too then and just reassemble the entire Alabama locker room from a couple years ago. Let's get Tua, Hurts, and Mac Jones all together.
They have a championship mindset.
That's right.
That they do.
Hey, guys, it's Connor from Penn State. I was listening to the Doc Rivers interview with Colin Cowherd, shout out Molinaro. And in the interview, he said, I told Joel that if he comes in shape, we're going to be good. And obviously he has gotten in shape and he's having the best season of his life prior to the injury. So as a fan, I'm happy that he's gotten in shape. But at the same time, I got pretty pissed off hearing that. I can't lie because this has been a problem. I look back to 2019 when we had Jimmy and JJ in the Toronto series. I mean, there were plenty of times in that series where Embiid was gassed in close games. So who knows? We win that series. We definitely would have beaten the Bucks, and then we would have faced Golden State in the finals without KD or Clay. So we could have won a title that year. I'm rambling about this, but I want to get your guys' take. Am I justified in being pissed that it took Embiid this long to flip the switch, or should I just shut up and be grateful that he has flipped the switch in general? Thanks, guys.
First of all, you should be grateful for the god known as Joel Embiid. Second of all, in shape or out of shape? Second of all, I somewhat agree with that statement of him being out of shape up until this season. But you have to remember, I don't think he was that out of shape 2 years ago against Toronto. I think that he played so much and was so overworked and was so used that it made him appear to be more out of shape than he was. Ron, do you remember during that Toronto series that I'm throwing it out there, but it was something this absurd. Joel Embiid was plus like 40, 50, 60 when the Sixers were plus 40, 50, 60 when Joel Embiid was on the court. But when he was off the court, they were like minus 40. Do you remember that? And that's why they got Horford. Exactly. So Embiid was playing that hard and that much 2 years ago. I don't necessarily think it was because he was out of shape he got gassed. I think he got gassed because he was playing fucking 100% of the time, 100% of the time.
I also think it was a little bit more last year than 2 years ago. There was like the story that last year he put on 30 pounds before the offseason or put on 30 pounds during the offseason and then also lost 30 pounds during the offseason. So he was telling everybody he lost 30 pounds, but it had nothing to do with the first 30 that he had put on. He just got back to neutral. But I think with Embiid, he's so naturally talented that and he's also young, he's figuring out what he needs to do to transcend as a player because he's gotten this far by definitely working really hard, but also being the biggest and most nimble human being that's ever played basketball. There's never been someone as big and as skilled as him that's ever played. So it's he's finding these new layers and thresholds and ceilings to kind of break through. And one of them is his conditioning. And hopefully he turns into fucking Kobe with the conditioning and he has a great stretching regimen and he knows how to fall and he does all these little things because he's been picking up these things throughout his career. And those are the things that's going to give him a really nice and long career and hopefully bring us a championship.
Exactly. And that story from a couple of years ago about him going to Qatar and getting a fetus, dead fetus's worth of baby stem cells injected into his foot. He knows how to take care of his body now, and he's rich enough that he can get those extra things and sleep in hyperbolic chambers overnight and take care of himself better. So he knows at least what he's doing, but I'm not that against that gripe. If we're trying to, look back at it and just be angry about the past.
I say just why are we living in the past, man?
It's being pretty nitty.
Yeah.
You're being pretty picky there, attacking Joel Embiid's weight from last year, 2 years ago when he's having an MVP year while he's hurt.
Yeah, I get it, but just live in the present, man. We're good now. Leave it alone. Yeah,
there's a lot of things to complain about.
All right, first time, long time. I don't – just what the hell is going on with the Flyers? I mean, they start out, you know, start out decent. They're towards the top of the division, the Mass Mutual East or whatever it is. And now, I mean, they can't stop a damn nosebleed. You get 9-0'd, then to a 6-1, and then yesterday you lose. You outshoot the Islanders by 20 and you still find a way to lose in overtime. I mean, like, hockey used to be fun, and now it's just, you know, the end of last year, a lot of momentum, good playoff series against the Islanders, and now you just, I mean, every night is, let's just find a new way of how to shit the bed. I mean, I'm trying to find some optimism. And apart from Joel Farabee, what is there? I mean, really, everyone's talking about how we could be buyers at the deadline, and now I just think we're on our way to selling, but no, I'm still going to watch, still trying to keep the faith and just hoping for some light at the end of the tunnel.
It's amazing how quickly things have changed mentality-wise for the Flyers from being Stanley Cup hopefuls in this town to, oh, this team is absolute shit. Well, and it happened within a matter of a month. 2 weeks. Yeah.
But listen, like, I think – we're from Philly, right? We tend to be very extreme when shit doesn't go our way at the slightest moment. And so I think we kind of need to pump the brakes here. Okay. Let's look at things kind of in retrospect. We are 2 points out of a playoff spot right now. Tonight, the Flyers start a 5-game stretch where every single team that they play is worse than them in the standings. We have the Devils and we have the Sabres. Now, those are huge games for us. These teams, both of these teams fucking suck. We can find a way to at least steal 6 points, I'm going to say, from these teams. Granted, it's in God's hands to see how the other teams in the division go, but it's not like we are completely fucked. Now, it really all depends on the defense. Shane Gostisbehere's got to go, man. He is a defensive liability. He was the reason why they lost against the Islanders last night. He turned the puck over in overtime before turning the puck over to give up or to go into overtime. But it's just, I still do, even though I tweeted the other night, I still do think they could get a defensive piece that's a big physical guy, that's a leader, and that is going to replace Matt Niskanen, and I think they could possibly be okay. But I think we're all right now very like, oh, well, shit's hitting the fan. We're fucked. Sell, sell, sell. Fire Alain Vigneault. Like, pump the brakes a little bit. You know, we could go on a run. You never know. Let's look at the glass half full here.
Yeah, even though they are losing to
They are losing right now. Yeah, that's not good.
But you just have to get in. They just have to get hot at the end of the year, get in, and then anything could happen.
Yeah, and the good thing that the Flyers have going for them right now is that there is a lot of time left of the season. There is a lot of time to turn us around. And Kimmo Timonen just turned 46, so, like, maybe take a look at him, trying to get him back in the fold.
I mean,
I wouldn't hate it for a couple shifts.
Let's get Kimmo back. We need chemotherapy. Let's get him back in here.
The NBA trade deadline is this Thursday. Am I wrong or am I right about that, boys?
You're correct. It could, you know, it could at any time we might need to do an emergency episode if we scoop somebody up.
Yeah, right now rumors are, Aaron Gordon hot and heavy, possibly to the Celtics. Somebody has some insider information that Marcus Smart might be involved in that deal. JJ Redick apparently is getting bought out by the Pelicans, which means, now correct me if I'm wrong, he can sign instantly with whoever he wishes. Is that wrong or is that correct?
Yeah, he could come. He'll probably, I don't know, maybe come back to Brooklyn. Maybe he'll come back to Philly, though.
Well, that's what kind of worries me. It's a no-brainer move for at least Daryl Morey to at least attempt to sign him and plug him in the system. But, you know, how close does he live to you, bro, in Brooklyn?
Stone's throw if I didn't have a candy arm.
Yeah, so I don't know. Maybe that really has some play.
Maybe you could give me a ride down to the games. We could fucking carpool down, watch a game, and then we'll fucking take his helicopter back, whatever he wants to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I heard an interesting name. I heard an interesting name today. Someone said that the Pacers are trying to move Malcolm Brogdon. He's got a couple years left on his deal. He's got a he's a relatively young player, kind of expensive. It's like $20 million per. So they were saying that we would have to give up two firsts, Maxey and Danny Green, for Malcolm Brogdon. A nice package deal. That's make sense to you?
That's a lot.
It's a lot, but I'd do it. I'd do it. I think he's good enough where you do it and insert him in the starting lineup, and he gets you over the top in the East. I would do that.
I hope that he gets you over the top. My one thing about this trade deadline for the Sixers is, what has been the stretch of the year where the Sixers have played like terrible ball? It hasn't happened. Like, we want to tinker here and there, but like, we've been consistently good. Like, there hasn't been like incredible stretches and then desolate stretches. It's been consistent, really good. We're still the best team in the league. We're back at the top of power rankings, at the top of the East. Like, let's not do something stupid to clog up this lineup that we have just for the sake of being busy.
I do agree with you to a point. I mean, we were just shooting shots at Daryl Green there, or Danny Green, but he literally saved the Sixers in overtime against the Nets, or against the Knicks the other night. So he's been playing better. And the entire bench, you know, Embiid going down may turn this team into a championship team, like, involuntarily, because these guys are getting more minutes and finally stepping up in his absence. Shake Milton's being Shake. He's doing everything he needs to do out there, specifically from a scoring standpoint. Furkan's looking like Furkan, like last year all of a sudden. We'll see how long that lasts. The bench has been the biggest issue of this team so far this year, and has been playing lights out when Embiid's not here. So maybe Embiid going down is a blessing in disguise. I still think they do need to do just one move, whether it's bringing on a George Hill, whether it's bringing in Redick, just getting a little bit more depth. But if Oladipo's out there and they can get him without giving up much, I'm still doing that.
It would be interesting, as long as, like, we just know our identity has to be strong. But that's why I'm happy to have a guy like Doc Rivers. I trust him more than I would have trusted Brown to mesh personalities. Like, we brought in like Alec Burks last year, and like seemed like there was no place in the world that he wanted to be less than playing for the Sixers. He was like, his whole vibe was like, what am I doing here? So we just need to know what anybody's role is when we bring them in. Like, we just need to have like a plan for everybody that's coming in, if we're bringing in buyouts, or if, God forbid, we fucking sell the farm for somebody. Like, we just need to know what their plan is now, what their plan is in 2 years. Is there a plan for them in like 5 years, you know?
Regardless, no matter what they do, the Eastern Conference specifically is going to go through how well a healthy Joel, a healthy Simmons, and Tobias Harris play.
You know who we could bring up? You know who we could bring up? The G League MVP, Paul
Reed. Rookie of the Year.
Rookie of the Year and MVP. He's like Ichiro. Like, when was the last time someone won Rookie of the Year and MVP in the same year? Paul Reed is special. He's long. He's like, usually that award goes to like a veteran guy who's like been in the G League for a long time. He's slogging through. This dude comes in as a rookie second round pick and gets it out the mud. That's been his whole his saying on Twitter. He says, like, oh, guess I'm gonna have to get it out the mud again every time they send him down to the G League. And he got it out the mud. He fucking brought it all the way out the mud. I fucking love him. Give him some playoff minutes. He's 6'9". He's like Siakam.
Do you remember, I'm not sure how related this is going to be, but you remember Rajah Bell during that 2001 run? He didn't play a single minute during the regular season. All of a sudden, he's getting like hardcore final minutes in the playoffs and like playing well. It's like, where the fuck did this guy come from? Rajah Bell. I will not mind a Rajah Bell on this team. Someone to come in, drop the nuts down in the court, and step it up when it matters.
Exactly. He's our Rajah Bell. Rajah Bell. And then they would ring the bell. They'd have the ding. That's an all-time Philadelphia guy.
Rajah Bell. Someone I haven't thought of in 10 years and probably won't think of for another 10. Good grief.
Not unless Paul Reed turns into him.
One would hope. One would hope. Lastly, Philly's starting up next week. or in 10 days or whatever. Aaron Nola, another opening day starter. It's looking like Odubel Herrera is going to be getting that center field spot, but good news, JT Realmuto back first at bat. Yeah. So that's all good things.
Yeah. Odubel is the center fielder. It looks like that's the move going forward. And he's been raking in spring training. Mm-hmm. Hopefully the clubhouse has everything, you know, sorted out. Hopefully he's atoned. It looks like that's what we're doing going forward. But like, with him locked in at center field, like, that's your lineup. Like, your lineup's kind of good. And you worry about pitching after, like, that little 1-2 punch at the top of the rotation. Like, will Eflin have as good of a year as he did last year? But, like, having the lineup locked in kind of feels nice. It kind of has given me a little bit of confidence about the Phillies. Like, I've been down about them. But, like, we're locked in. Like, let's fucking do it. Like, the lineup is good.
The Phillies over under on the Barstool Sportsbook, last time I checked, and I'll check it again right here.
It's pretty low, right?
Is 80.5.
Yeah, that's pretty low.
Slam that over. That's abysmally low.
Yeah.
So I would definitely take a look at that, because they were basically a 500 team last year without a bullpen. And what I mean without a bullpen, they would have been better without a bullpen rather than what they fucking trugged out there, which was the worst bullpen since 1913, which ironically was still the Phillies. So I can't imagine them, if healthy, going less than 500. I still say the Braves are running away with the division. You want to look at a bet that's like money, honey? The Braves are plus 120 on the Barstool Sportsbook to win the East.
Wow.
So yeah, I just don't understand. I don't understand how anybody would even think the Mets, who over under is 90.5, is going to win 90.5 fucking games. Like, the Mets just ain't going to be like that good. They'll be better, but they're not like competing with the Braves. The Braves were awesome last year and only got better.
Are we projected to finish last?
No, the Marlins still, even though they made the playoffs last year.
One thing I'm hoping for the Phillies, or like looking for, wishing for, is that like just somebody hits for average. Like Segura, like was supposed to hit for average last year.
Yeah.
And he just like got caught up in, like, I don't know if he's just spending too much time with Bryce and just like fucking, he was like smacking home runs around a little bit, but it's like, if we can just like, if people just kind of play their position and like what they're supposed to do offensively, then I think that we'll at least have like a pretty high powered offense. Like, if people play at like at least an average or a little bit above average for their career averages, like, that's a pretty good line.
Yeah, you gotta love Gene Segura and Didi, like, batting .320 for their respective teams in Seattle and New York, and come over to Philly and go .260, .280.
That's what I mean. Like,
must be the water.
Price, it's like, yeah, it's something in the water.
They I agree with you, but I mean, if every player in that offense, if Kingery needs to figure it out, like, at this point, he's having such a shitty spring. I wouldn't even be opposed to sending him down again and just like figure it out, man. If he's supposed to play, you know, every other day anyway, if healthy and if doing well. But if he's not doing well, then like he's got to get his dick on right, because something's wrong with him.
That's why it's important that Odubel is like playing well, because it's like it's not going to be every other day. And you know, Mickey Moniak's having a decent spring.
Mickey Moniak is having a very good spring. Why not? I still don't think he's ready to take that load every single day solely from a rejection factor. I think it'd be better for him to start in the minors this year, still grow as a player, and then be absolutely ready to take over that starting role when it's there, than start and then have a hungry Odubel or Adam Heasley just come in if he like has a bad 2 weeks and then just get his confidence shit on. But that's just me. All right, boys, quick first time, long time tonight. We appreciate you. We appreciate everybody. Leave a comment, leave a 5-star, leave everything. Let us know what you want from us. Still unsanctioned, still need the love. Hopefully nothing. Well, I don't know. What are we hoping for with the Sixers? Are we hoping for something big here?
I'm something big. We're gonna ride.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's get it. If we get somebody, like, let's get somebody. You know what I mean? Like, if we're going to do it, let's do it. Like, I'm going to be on board no matter what because this is the year.
The awesome thing about Daryl Morey and the Sixers situation right now is my mindset with them is completely opposite than Howie Roseman. Howie Roseman could bring back Jesus Christ himself, and I would be like, something's off. Something's wrong. Meanwhile, Daryl Morey could summon Lucifer and cause the apocalypse, even though ironically that's what like Christ would do. And I'd be like, all right, I trust Morey. This is right. This is a good play. Let's do this.
Because he hasn't heard us yet. He hasn't heard us. He's still in our good graces and we're still in his.
What could he honestly do right now that would be like the worst thing possible realistically? Because he ain't going to like trade Simmons right now and completely blow up the team. Like what could he possibly do that would like be negative?
Until the season's over, he's infallible. I really think. I think until like that we it God forbid like we don't wind up like if there's a way that we don't wind up winning the championship this year, then like people will start to turn on him. But in the first season, like he's made so many good moves and the team is going so in the right direction that like it's he has that goodwill right now, that really infallible goodwill.
Love to see it. All right, boys. We'll see you next week. We'll hang up and listen.